Thanks for tuning in to our podcast series, Scaling Without Borders. As a pan-European PR agency, we've supported many companies in their journey to expand to other markets. In this series, we take a deep dive into how scale-ups can grow their business beyond their home country. We'll shed a light on this challenge from different perspectives. Entrepreneurs who have already successfully done this, the investor community funding these ambitious people, and the startup ecosystem supporting them. This first season, we focus on the Dutch scale-up community. What are their insights on how to scale abroad successfully? All to inspire other entrepreneurs to perhaps do the same. Hello, and welcome to this episode of Scaling Without Borders. In this series, we interview some of Europe's leading experts in the startup community to learn from their experience and understand their vision on how to successfully grow a startup or scale up across borders. In today's episode, we're joined by Rob van den Heuvel. And Rob is the co-founder and CEO of SendCloud, a leading European shipping software company that helps e-commerce organizations streamline and simplify their logistics processes. Since the inception of SendCloud in 2012, Rob and his two co-founders, Bas and Sabi, have built a very successful company that now serves more than 23,000 e-commerce organizations in their home market in the Netherlands, Belgium, Germany, Spain, Italy, and the UK. With his extensive experience in expanding across borders, I'm sure Rob will have some interesting insights to share with us today. I'm Eric. I'm a senior partner at Taito, and I'm joined by Chantal, who's a senior partner as well.
Welcome to the Scaling Without Borders podcast, Rob. Happy to have you.
Thank you, Chantal. Thank you, Eric. Thanks for the kind introduction. So much appreciated.
Great. So let's start off. So you started your entrepreneurial journey by founding e-commerce platform Phone Gadgets. So can you share with us how this experience inspired you and your co-founders to start SendCloud?
Yeah, sure. So I started Phone Gadgets, which is an online store selling accessories for phones and tablets back in 2010. I was 18 back then. It was kind of the first entrepreneurial thing we did. I founded that together with the boss, as well as one of the two co-founders in SendCloud. And since we were students, we were kind of bored at business school, to be fair. So we're studying. It's like, it's all kind of easy. It's not really challenging. It doesn't feel like the real world. So at a certain point, we were like, okay, let's try to start something. And yeah, where do you start? You start an online store. After growing that store for, I think, 10, 12 months, we were doing 20, 30 orders per day. And then Boss was the unlucky one who always needed to pick and pack everything. He was like, Jesus, Rob, I'm spending so much time. Like every order costs me 5-10 minutes to ship. We use an ancient system of the Dutch Post, which was called Parcelware. It's a Windows program. And then we were using a DHL website and UPS WorldShip. And all of these systems were not connected. We were copying and pasting lots of data up and down. And it just was like the weirdest experience. And we were like, wait a minute. There needs to be some kind of solution that kind of automates the entire shipping process. So we decided to connect our own Magento as a software platform online store to SendCloud, and SendCloud connects to multiple carriers, and we started solving lots of problems around shipping. So but the initial problem was, okay, you want to connect your store to a carrier and generate the shipment within one click. And that's where we started, and it grew kind of to a full suite shipping platform, what it is now. With actually, we have 30,000 clients these days, so still growing quite fast. We're active in 8 markets around Europe, and with a team of 450 people. It's been a really interesting and an enjoyable journey, and challenging as well, by the way.
Yeah, so from being bored at school, you created your own challenge, so to say.
Kind of. And then you roll into the next challenge automatically.
Yeah, great. So, and well, about a challenge, of course, you're expanding almost continuously, and you're in a range of European countries right now. So when did you actually decide it was the right time to expand abroad? And how did you actually prioritize which market you wanted to go after?
Yeah, so back in 2012 when we started SendCloud. We were only in the Netherlands, of course, started there. But then after 2 years, the Belgian Post came up to us. It's our southern neighbor. And they asked us, do you want to expand to Belgium? And back then, we didn't really think about going international yet. I think we're not ready as a company to do it. But opportunistic as we are, and quite naive back then, it's like, yeah, why not? Let's just integrate the Belgian Post, see what happens. And then before you know it, you're in another country, and you have the same kind of experience. So we kind of got dragged by the market to internationalize. We also got lots of signups, so people signing up to use our platform from France and from Germany. So we knew there was some kind of demand for a solution such as ours. And then we started expanding quite aggressively all across Europe. But the first expansion was Belgium. And it wasn't that we thought about it a lot. It was just being, I say, entrepreneurial, a bit naive, like, yeah, how hard can it be? It was quite hard.
And a question about that. So you actually said at first you didn't think you were ready to expand internationally. Why was that the case?
Because our product was still very much in development. The Netherlands home market, right? Back then it had around 60,000 online stores. And I think in 2014, we were serving 400 or 500 of them. So we had a lot of growth ahead of us. We were a small team. We didn't have that much engineering capacity. We didn't have the funding. If I would have advised myself in 2014, I would be like, focus on your home market, build some more scale, make the product a bit more mature before you go. But I think it still ended up quite nicely because we went international. Our platform was built and developed in a different way than what we would have done if we would have stayed in the Netherlands.
So now you're in Europe. Are you looking to go even broader to the US or other regions in the world?
Yeah, our mission is to solve shipping globally. So yes, the timeline of that, this will take time because every single market has its own complexity. In shipping, it's not like you can really easily scale in multiple geographies at the same time. You have product market issues. So for example, in Italy, people still in 20% of the times pay with cash to the delivery driver, right? Your system needs to support that. In Spain, shipping pricing is per zone. So if you ship something which is quite near to the, let's say, Madrid, it's cheaper than if you ship it to like the north of Spain. So you have all these complexities. And in France, 40% of shipments will be delivered to service points. So we also didn't use that a lot in Northern Europe back then. So all of these complexities you need to continuously solve. So our mission is to solve it globally. We will start in Europe and then scale onwards.
So yeah, I understand the local differences, but is that also the biggest barrier to go international for international expansion, or what are the challenges as a company you run into?
Yeah, so specifically to our industry, when you do, it might be a bit similar to what you see in payments. You need volumes going through your system, right? So you need a lot of transactions, volumes to make the business model work and to get volumes, you need clients, and it's kind of chicken or the egg, right? So we offer discounted rates, for example, to merchants that ship to us. So if you use our platform, let's say you use DHL, we ship millions of packages with DHL, and therefore we get a discount. And we share that discount with our merchants. But if you enter a market, you have no volumes. You don't get discount, basically. So it's quite hard to get the flywheel started, but if it goes, then it goes quite fast. So that's specifically for our business. And of course, we also run into all the organizational challenges, the cultural issues, the financing part. So it's quite an interesting journey to internationalize.
Okay. And so you're based in several European countries right now and over 400 employees. So how does culture, what role does culture play in terms of cultural fit, not only product market, but also among your employees? So how important is this when you're expanding to a new market?
Yeah, I think it's you need to know which culture you're heading into. So in SendCloud today, we have around 60 nationalities. We internationalized early, so everything is in English and in the business. But however, if you sell to French people, of course, you need French speakers, native French speakers who understand the culture, the way of sales. Same goes for the Germans and people in the UK and even for Belgium, actually. So you need native speakers who understand the culture to go into that market. At least that was for us the case. And we are in e-commerce, which is, in theory, quite internationally oriented. Lots of people who understand English, but we would still, to really break into a market, you need locals. And if you look at a company culture, I think our company culture has always been open, transparent. So one of our core values is no bullshit. I think that works really well. It's very Dutch though. We're quite direct with each other, but with a positive swing. I think one of the two others we have is have fun. So people generally enjoy the ride, right? So it's quite a interesting growth story. You get lots of different challenges. But we also believe that having fun at work and making fun with your colleagues is actually a positive thing and contributes to work happiness and also to, the success of the business. And the last one we have is grow and win. So as I said, we're a growth company. We're still growing really fast. But it also goes for all the staff. So imagine being 20 people and then 4 years later, you're in 400, right? So every single one really would have to develop themselves. So we're putting a lot of our capital as well to work, to develop the staff, to train them. And of course, win is important to us as well. Not in a traditional sense, because we believe in, I think, win-win, where everybody in the ecosystem around us wins. So store, the online store wins, the carrier wins, we win, and the consumer wins. But culture is essential. I think you need to have an open, curious culture to be able to scale internationally.
Okay, so an open culture and also open, no bullshit communications then is essential.
Yes. Yeah. So it takes some getting used to. So let's say, for example, people from the UK, they say, oh, it's great. Yeah, no, it's great. Oh, very interesting. And if somebody from the UK says very interesting, it means like, oh, what a load of shit. So it doesn't make any, it doesn't. And while a Dutch person would say, just say, yeah, no, it's not interesting to me at all. And I think these, it's important to know.
Yeah, it can be really hard to read between the lines, right? And actually feel what people are really saying or meaning in order, to grow and go ahead.
And also the hierarchy is different, right? So for example, in Germany, there's a lot more hierarchy than the Netherlands. In the Netherlands, an intern will tell me how to do my job. They do that. I kind of like that, right? So because I was growing up here, but if you're in Germany, it's a whole different ball game, right? You're the Geschäftsführer, and that's important. And what you say, that kind of happens, and it differs a lot, and it also makes it really interesting actually to lead an international company.
So do you then actually have local people managing the local branches, or do you kind of, evangelize the Dutch culture across those other markets as well in the organization?
Yeah, I wouldn't say we are a Dutch culture, but I would say you evangelize your own culture, right? So you try to have your own microcosm of the world, and you need that kind of alignment across the company from my perspective. And we don't have country managers, so we have people responsible for the sales function in for example Germany, and for the marketing function, and for the customer support function, but we don't use the country manager model. We used it in the past, and for us it didn't really work.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about funding, and next topic. Your last round was the Series C in 2021. How do you approach fundraising, and what do you feel are the most important factors when scale-ups are looking for funding?
If you have great numbers, it's really easy. So let's start there. So if you do really well, investors will like your story, right? I think the second component is you should share a story and a vision of the future with the investors. if you fundraise, build a structured process. So the only thing which will kind of take up the valuation of the company is competition in the actual fundraise. Because if you're talking to a single investor, they will know that, right? And they eventually will feel like, yeah, we can offer this company a valuation which might be a bit below market. And if there is no competition and you have the only term sheet is that one, yeah, you might sign that one. So how to raise funding is a different topic, but my approach to funding is what I've learned is my last round was 150 million and more funding doesn't make you a better company. It kind of makes you complacent. It will make you do too many things at the same time. So because we are, and maybe entrepreneurs are naturally more opportunistic, want to do lots of stuff, and more funding enables you to do all of these things. And that actually distracts the business immensely and it makes you lose your focus. So I would say raise the minimum of what you need to raise to build a successful business and don't overdo it. Don't over fundraise. You'll spend it either way. But that will be my advice on general fundraising.
That's a valuable insight. Besides organic growth, your journey also included some strategic acquisitions. So a little bit of a buy and build strategy, I guess. Is that to expand your capabilities or would you also consider acquiring competitors, for instance, to gain market share?
Yeah, so it's both, right? I believe buy and build is just another way to facilitate growth. So we now did two acquisitions. We're working on a third. Two of them are product acquisitions and one of them was a competitor. So we did both ends of the spectrum. I think the product acquisition, it really depends on the founders and the team who is there. Actually, same goes for the competitor acquisition. So it depends on the people. They will make it a success. And I think also we've learned as an organization what not to do when absorbing a product, for example. So the second time around, we have a way better plan, way more structured. We're starting with integration way earlier. So I already see us kind of implementing the changes. And I would say with buy and build, we specifically decided to, as we call that internally, training the muscle. So before you do a really big one, we will do a couple of smaller ones to take in all of the learnings. I believe if you, as a founder, you let's say you acquire a business which is equal or maybe let's say even a third of your size, and you never did an acquisition, I think it's bound to fail. It's bound to be a car crash kind of. And I think because the first one, second one, we now executed were relatively small, I think we kind of know what to do as well on the bigger scale. So but I believe in M&A as an accelerator for growth. Not a replacement for organic growth, but basically, let's say you grow 30, 40% organically. With M&A, you can add 10, 20, 30% on top. So then you can really create that exponential growth.
Okay, well, thanks for sharing that insight. So I can imagine that, of course, as a founder and a founder team, you have like a clear vision for your company. So, and that at some point you have to also hire like other key leaders in your organization as you scale and grow. So like hiring these leadership roles, what kind of qualities do you then prioritize or what are you looking for to support your growth?
Yeah. First thing you need is people who think differently than you. So I think you need good discussion in the leadership team. You need to not always agree, because if everybody always agrees, it actually, that's really, really, I think a bad leadership team. I think I just hired a new CFO, CMO, CRO, and CTO. So except and we also promoted our chief customer officer. So I have an almost fully new leadership team. it was needed after some time. I think we needed to get a new external point of view, people who have done it before, who have seen the scale, because scaling to 450 people is one thing, but scaling the business to a public company in the future is a whole other thing. So we looked for people with experience who thought differently to us, even in the interview process. We looking for still people that are really motivated. So usually, let's say people who have been, or are really, this is going to sound a bit weird, but are rich and have exited and don't need to work anymore, I'm not looking for those people. I think they don't have some kind of chip on their shoulder or the motivation to really go ahead. Yeah, so I like motivated, curious, willing to learn, contrarian, people who think different than the rest, who have their own opinion, and then with preferably some proven experience, but not to the level that they, let's say, don't need to work anymore.
No, just people with a fresh perspective and who still have like the really get-go mentality, right?
The drive to really push ahead and to make something of it. I think, and it's also really hard to hire senior executives. To be fair, I think spoke to one of our former investors. He's like, Rob, it's 50-50. So whatever you say is like 50% works out and 50% doesn't. That's an executive was the former CEO of Amazon. It's like it's just really really tough. And there is no way, a really good way to improve that score, to be fair. So I think these days, I think we have a really good senior leadership team. But it took me 18 months, I think, to really build that. I set out 18 months ago, I started going to build a new leadership team. And it took me now 18 months to get them all in seats. And it's been quite a challenge to find those people.
Yeah, well, you also need to be patient sometimes as well, then.
Yeah, forget about it. I'm not. So I'm not patient. I'm impatient, I think.
Great. So you started the company with three founders, co-founders. They often say like three is a crowd, and you've been, you know, navigating the scaling journey with the three of you for quite some time. So how did you manage to stay like in sync with three founders?
Yeah, so as with Boss, I founded my online store before, and I've known him since I was 12. So we were good friends, and I think we worked together really nicely. And Sabi, I met actually during my side job during college, which was selling phones at T-Mobile and contracts. So that was actually quite nice. And he was extremely good in sales, really good with people. So when I met Sabi, I was like, okay, this guy is really interesting. Thinks very much different to how I think. And we became friends after that. And then once you start working together, we learned relatively early into our journey. They said like most of the startups, they fall apart due to co-founders issues and team issues. And we're like, okay. We don't see that happening to ourselves, but at least we set everything up. If one of us would leave, right? Or we would have that kind of covered. So you have a vesting scheme with your co-founders, which means you get a bit of equity every quarter instead of getting all the equity at the start. We had a principle that we would always treat, no matter the role we have, we would be treated the same in compensation and in shares. So we are fully equal in every respect. Only I have a different job and Boss has a different job and Sabi has a different job, but we get paid the same. We have the same equity stake. So we should also all put in the same amount of effort. And I think that already prevents a whole lot of frustration, right? So let's say the CEO takes a bigger equity stake. Yeah, the others could be like, yeah, then you also need to work harder, do more. That takes a lot of resentment, I think, away. And every month we still go for a dinner with the three of us and have some drinks, have a bit of fun, have a bit of a laugh. And also we then discuss all the tiny and really big frustrations we have. So actually, we're doing that again tomorrow. Which is nice because it's needed. But once you speak about these frustrations early, they don't blow up, right? So they don't become really big. And I think that's what kept us kind of together for so long. And that's also why the relationship today is still really, really good. I would recommend everybody founds with two or three people to just sit down with each other every so often, have that open conversation and have that conscious moment of feedback.
Sounds like a healthy relationship between the three of you. Yeah.
Yeah, it still is.
That's good to hear. So yeah, you've been very successful with the company, but I guess it hasn't always been smooth sailing. How do you personally stay focused during challenging times?
I would say companies is never really smooth sailing, right? So even the most storied companies who have the fastest growth, I think usually in the operations part is then a shit show, or in engineering part. So it's always challenging. And it depends a bit. I try to, it's a bit of a classic. I try to, when I know I'm frustrated or grumpy, people can read it from my face. So I try to then either, let's go to the, we have a gym at the office, let's go to the gym or go for a run, get outside, take a walk, relax a bit. I tend to have relatively quiet weekends. So I don't plan too much because I actually kind of need to decompress a bit from a full week. So then I mountain bike every weekend in the forest. For the international people, yes, we have hills in the Netherlands. You can still mountain bike here. It's a thing. So that I do on every Saturday morning, and I go I work out on every Sunday. So I try to calm my weekends down, make them really quiet, so I get charged up again for a full week. Stress relief is for me, I think, gym, running, mountain biking, but also sometimes having a drink with some friends or with my co-founders and or with other entrepreneurs, having a bit of fun, some food, and yeah.
Okay, well, looking ahead, what are the key milestones you're aiming for in the next few years, and how do you plan to achieve those?
Yeah, so for us, one of the key milestones is getting to 100,000 active merchants, so online stores in Europe, and shipping 1 billion packages a year. So those two we should be able to achieve somewhere in the coming eight, I shouldn't name time, but somewhere in the coming 2 years. One of our goals as a business is to become a public company as well. So to run an IPO. Timeline of that is always a big question mark. You cannot really control that as a company, but yeah, you need significant scale for that. So we're still building that scale to become a company who can actually execute an IPO. Yeah, and for me personally, I'd love to learn as much as possible in the coming years. So it's quite fortunate to be on this journey, right? So this is interesting. It's challenging. It's pushing me personally, and I think that's yeah, I really love it actually. Now I love it. Sometimes I really hate it, actually. So it's a bit of a balance.
So, like the last question already. So, what has been your biggest learning or surprise during this whole scaling process you're in? And what would be your most valuable advice be for other Dutch entrepreneurs with international ambitions?
I think my biggest learning is. There you can go on in so many paths, but I think one of the biggest ones recently, I think, is the funding one. So I always thought more money would solve a lot of problems. Actually, it creates a lot of problems. It creates problems in your culture. It creates problems with your financial discipline. People will start not thinking efficient anymore. So I think that's a real, that's a real problem if you raise too much funding. So I think try to prevent that. Don't raise too much. Be efficient. Keep that mindset of building a sustainable business. I think that's a really important one. And I think that's that. And I forgot the second part of your question, Chantal.
The second part was actually, what would your most valuable advice be for other Dutch entrepreneurs with international ambitions?
I think just go for it, right? So it will never be the perfect time if you're about to internationalize as a company. It's never the perfect time, but if you never try, you will never know. And you can always stay in your home market, think small. But I would think in the Netherlands, we often think small, we think in problems. I think big, be contrarian, and just build that scaling business. I think that will be my advice to other Dutch scaling entrepreneurs.
And of course, don't forget to have fun along the way.
Yeah, have a laugh every once in a while. If you don't, then I think you have to reevaluate your life priorities. Life is short.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Well, thank you, Rob, for giving us an insight into SendCloud and into your scaling journey. I hope our listeners enjoyed this conversation with Rob as much as we did. If you want to know more about scaling up, please tune in for other episodes in this series. If you have any feedback on this episode, contact the Tido team on LinkedIn or comment on the video episode of this podcast on YouTube. You can also drop us an email at hello@tidopr.com. Thanks for listening and see you soon.